Acts chapter 2, verse 42. We'll read together just to 47. Familiar piece. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to the fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe, and many wonders and miraculous signs were done by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common, selling their possessions and goods. They gave to anyone as he had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. May God bless the reading of his word to us. Church, why bother? We're going to look at some points that make this up, looking upwards, looking around, looking outward, looking inward. But I want to just set a scene. It's very easy, it seems to me, to find reasons for why we shouldn't connect, attend, or belong to a local church. Many people fall away from the local church. And certainly our British culture has now disconnected belief in Jesus Christ with any sense of the need to go, let alone belong, to a lively local church. I hope you got the thrust of that, because what I'm suggesting to you is that there are some Christians who believe that church doesn't need to feature in their faith anymore. And if you were to compare that, for example, to the traditional Roman Catholic understanding, which literally says, and I don't know if you know this, that there can be no salvation outside of the church. So in other words, if you don't attend church from a Roman Catholic point of view, you are missing out on salvation. Now, we don't go that far. There now exist numerous opinions, though, and perspectives in what we've known for the last two decades, I guess that's about the time, of what we call postmodernism, where seemingly everyone's opinion is right. It's a most disarming world to live in, isn't it? There are no final foundations or hold-on points in postmodernism. And even as we speak, they are being swept away in greater ways. And yet, is it right that, from looking at this issue of church, why bother? Is it right to say that therefore everyone's view and opinion of the local church is right? I want to hit straight on and to be brave and to face our dragon questions this morning. These, I've written them down. There's no PowerPoint, so don't bother looking. These are, I think, the dragons about the local church. First of all, some no longer see the local church as relevant. Secondly, many see the church as a hangover from Victorian church life. And you've only to look around at the trappings of the inside of this building to know that this reflects the many Victorian chapels that are listed. Blood pressure up for a minute. Through our land. And somehow one day, well, not too long in the future, two decades, this won't exist anymore, perhaps. Thirdly, born again Christians, it seems, now exist outside of any local church setting. These are the criticisms. Can that be true? Fourthly, TV and internet church right now supplies an increasingly large number of people. People listen to podcasts. People will literally connect in visually or audibly to a church today. They won't go to church. I mean, we grew up, we might not care to confess this, with turning on Songs of Praise at 6:30. Songs of Praise has now gradually shifted back, hasn't it, to 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So you get Antiques Roadshow instead, or Country File. Sorry, I'll be in trouble now. And of course, the new churches are blossoming out there. What are the new churches? Supermarkets. Today, as a Sunday, we'll see hundreds and hundreds of people going to the new churches. If it's not supermarkets, it will be DIY stores or garden centres and even sports fields or sports stadiums. And they even sing hymns in the sports stadiums. Church, it's moved. I was looking and someone moved it. And the worst of it is, loads of people will have this morning driven past this building in South Street. They will have driven past this building on their way to those supermarkets, DIY centres. And you know, the sad news is, they won't even have looked our way. They won't even have glanced, even though there's a new sign that says, "This is a church." So what? It's not relevant to me. And then we have disenfranchised Christian believers who now exist in quantity outside the church. Whether these be hurt church members, whether these people who've been sexually abused in previous church settings, whatever stream of church, or whether these be people in same-sex relationships and marriages who claim that they cannot find a welcoming church, or those from gay or lesbian or neutral gender status who feel that they are unlikely to be welcome in worship at a church like ours, let alone be welcomed around the communion table, and most definitely not in full church membership. Disenfranchised Christians. I've got two more. And then you have the most bizarre latest thing, which are atheist churches. Atheist churches, which have popped up, at least in cities around this country, which are made up of people who like church but don't want to believe in God. So they have taken all the trappings of a typical local church and meet regularly, just that they make sure that they no longer believe in God. They even sing music. They meet as atheist churches. And lastly, my favourite, perhaps it doesn't really fit, though I do enjoy airing it from time to time, that today in Wellington, more Christians, serious, committed, believing Christians, will leave town this morning to drive to Taunton or Tiverton or somewhere else in the hills and the villages in order to go to church. The church that they prefer to go to rather than a local church. That's why I find snow days, when we are snowed in, or perhaps the day will come when literally the globe runs out of petrol, and everyone will have to go to a local church, unless you go by horse and cart, which is almost a possibility, I guess. So those are the criticisms of why you shouldn't bother with church. But here's the next bit. I'm not even sure whether we in the church here, let alone any other church, whether we actually believe in the church. What are our favourite dragons? Well, I've got a list for that as well. First of all, I don't like the worship here. It goes on for too long, and the songs are repeated. Number two, I don't like the sermons here. They go on for too long. You don't preach the gospel here. Next criticism, you preach the gospel too much here. You are not welcoming. Your services go on too long. You are too liberal. Actually, one church leader in the town says of us, and I'm going to catch him out one of these days, he calls us traditional church. I am greatly offended. You're too liberal. You're too fundamentalist. You're too challenging. You're too middle of the road. You don't have enough prayer ministry or altar appeals. Well, I could keep going. I'm sure that you could fill in the gaps. And here's the final question. Will church always be like this in 2 decades' time? Or perhaps you have the view that you'd actually prefer church the way it was. Bring back the hymns. Bring back the books we can hold. I once had a conversation in my previous church where one guy who actually didn't hang around in the church, he said, because we were projecting the songs on the screen, he said, I need something in my hands. As I sing, I need a book. If I don't have a book, I can't worship. Well, I give you a book, but it may not make any sense. Actually, I would firmly argue that such reflections or comments are those actually of style, not substance. Just like, well, I prefer to listen to Radio 2 or 3 or 4 or Classic FM. You know, we all have different style preferences. Now, those preferences in terms of church are style preferences. Perhaps it might sound as if the more pertinent question to ask, though, might be, does the church have a future? Or, as the wonderfully entitled book sums it up, you know, does the church have a future? Does the future have a church? Will we still be here in another 50 years' time? I don't know. I pray God we will be. I like what Winston Churchill once said about how he related to the church. He said, the church is rather like a flying buttress to him. He supported it from the outside. Following Jesus is one thing. Following other Christians into or to church is quite another. Why bother? The poet Anne Sexton puts it like this. They pounded nails into his hands upon the cross. We can see the cross behind me, in front of you. They pounded nails into his hands. After that, well, everyone wore hats. What have we done to church? Several barriers are often quoted. Hypocrisy is one. Nietzsche was once asked what made him so negative towards Christians. He replied, I would believe in their salvation if they looked a little more like people who have been saved. Fair comment. You know, we wear fine clothes. I was a bit iffy about this shirt, actually. We wear fine clothes, but as soon as we get home, we forget who we are. Perhaps. 4 points then this morning, looking up. Philip Yancey writes, I used to approach church with the spirit of a discriminating consumer. I viewed the worship service as a performance I like. I would come and say, entertain me. Soren Kierkegaard said, we tend to think of a church as a kind of theatre. We sit in the audience attentively watching the actor on stage who draws every eye to himself or herself. If sufficiently entertained, we show our gratitude with applause and cheers. But church should be the opposite of theatre. In church, God is the audience of our worship. Far from playing the role of the leading actor, the ministers, whether it be the worship leader or the minister, those leading worship should function something like a prompter. They should be inconspicuous, and they sit behind the stage almost prompting the worship to happen. What matters most takes place within the hearts of the congregation, not amongst the actors on the stage. We should leave a worship service asking ourselves, not what did I get out of it, but rather, was God pleased with what happened in our service today? So looking up in a worship service to gaze not at people but towards God should be our practice. I have to say I find that really hard when I go rarely to other churches. I too can fall into the trap of a critical spirit. And yet we must direct the spotlight away from the ministers to God himself. C.S. Lewis wrote about his church. He said this: I disliked very much their hymns, which I considered to be fifth-rate poems set to sixth-rate music. But as I went on, I saw the great merit of it. I realized that the hymns, which were just sixth-rate music, were nevertheless being sung with a devotion and benefit by an old saint in elastic-sided boots in the opposite pew. And then you realize that you aren't fit to clean those boots. It gets you out of your solitary conceit. Church exists not to entertain us. A factor we see big time in places now like Hillsongs. I cannot get my head around that. I know some of you can't either. The whole sit back and enjoy what we're going to do on stage. To me, worship involves every one of us. To encourage the vulnerability or to build a self-esteem or to facilitate friendships, to worship God, all those are key. But if it fails in worshiping God, we fail in everything. The ministers, the music, the sacraments, and the other trappings of worship are really just promptings to support the ultimate goal of getting worshippers in touch with God. And how we do that, of course, is a critical question. It's a subjective one. It's not a subjective one, it is an objective one. It's not about my tastes and my likes. It's about leading the whole family of God in worship. If I doubt that, I need to go back to the Old Testament. And it devotes nearly as much space to the specifications for worship in the tabernacle and the temple as the New Testament devotes to the life of Christ. Walter Wink says, to worship is to remember who owns the house. As Baptist Christians, you know, we do not believe that God lives here. When schools visit, I'm really keen to say that, you know, God is not hidden down there under the organ. God for us is anywhere. We can worship God in a shed, we can worship God in a field. We do not need a sacred place to go to. And therefore we must deny consumer church. We must fight against church shopping. And we must focus not on the trappings, We must focus on the goal of worshipping God. Secondly, looking around. One of the things about this is that we look horizontally at each other this morning and we say, oh, hello. I see you're here. I see who's not here. The danger can be in finding a church that we like, that we try and find a church where there are people just like us. White, middle class, perhaps. How dangerous that is. That's why, for me as your pastor, that I believe that the worship style here at Wellington Baptist Church needs to be as broad as possible. We have different tastes. Let me be honest with you. As a Word and Spirit Christian who went through Charismatic Renewal, who went through Toronto Blessing, who went through second, third, or fourth, or fifth waves, whatever charismatics call it, that when I go to charismatic, so-called charismatic services, can I be honest here? It feels as if some worship teams are almost trying to conjure up God. Almost try to recreate him because he's long since left the building. That's why, for me, worship is about a journey. Worship is picking up where we are and leading us to a place of glory. How easily we forget that the first Christian church was the first institution in the history of the world to bring together everyone in equality. Jews and Gentiles, men and women, slaves and free. For example, the earliest Christian church broke down barriers. Unlike most religions, Christians welcomed men and women alike in an equal way. The Greeks excluded slaves from social groupings, whilst Christians said slaves are as equal and valuable in the church. The Jewish temple separated by race and gender, but Christians said no, everyone is welcome equally around the Lord's table. In Rome, mostly the male aristocracy was made up of the Christian church. Yet the Christian church said, no. Around in our worship, women and the poor are just as much able to take leadership roles. God's intent, said Paul, was that through the church the manifold wisdom of God should be made known to the rulers and authorities in the heavenly realms. Philip Yancey says, church is the one place I go in a week that brings together generations. Infants still held at their mother's breast. Children who squirm and giggle at the wrong times. Responsible adults, well, just about, who know how to act appropriately at all times. And senior citizens who are liable to drift off to sleep if the preacher drones on for too long. Or not. When we look for a church, we need to look for one that's from a diverse background so that we can learn from the uninhibited styles of different people, from the traditional styles of the elderly to the daily struggles of mum with preschool children. We should intentionally look for a church made up of people not like us, but who are different from us. Thirdly, looking outward. The church, said Archbishop William Temple, is the only cooperative society in the world that exists for the benefit of its non-members. You know, we are not here for us. We are here for those who do not know Christ. So what should we emphasize then in Wellington Baptist Church? Where should we put our energies? Where should we put our budget? Where should we put our people power? I do like what Luis Palau, the South American evangelist, said of the early church, or rather the nature of the church now. He said this, the church, he said, is like manure. Pile it together and it stinks up the neighborhood. Spread it out and it enriches the world. That's what the church should be. When you look for a church, look for one that enriches the world. Look for one that understands the need to look outward. In fact, outreach may well be the most important factor and where we put our money in a church's success or failure. If we do not do outreach, pack it up. Go home. Bury this church and close the doors. Whether that be supporting overseas missionaries, that's mission. Whether that means going and sorting out the needs of the local community and neighbourhood, that's mission. Whether it be educating people to read or sorting out their finances in debt and crisis, that's mission. Whether it means putting food on the table because they can't afford to put food on the table. Whether it be supporting the sick and going and praying with the dying or the lonely or the isolated or the bereaved or the elderly. That's mission. Where it matters, there you'll find us. That is what we are here for. Now, I know that's exhausting. Now, I look at the church diary and I think, my goodness me, I've got to go out again. I know it's exhausting. Philip Yancey says, in a paradox of faith, the one who shares love comes away enriched, not impoverished. Lastly, looking inward. The grace of Christ towards us and through us is at the very heart of the gospel. Yancey says of his own experiences where he grew up in a church, a fundamentalist church, that perhaps in response to the legalism of his own childhood, Bill Leslie, the local pastor of LaSalle Street Church, never tired every week of the theme of grace. He recognized his own endless need for grace. He preached it almost every Sunday, and he offered it to everyone around him in starkly practical ways. Our brothers and sisters in Christ, we absorb grace. That's why we're here. Grace is being given to each of us this morning as we meet. We do so by osmosis. Grace is the truth that God loves us not because we deserve it, but because he is the God of grace. God's love is free of charge. No strings attached. There is nothing I can do to make God love me more or you more. But grace can be absent from churches. In a world of competition, judgment and ranking, a world of ungrace. You know, out there, I don't know about you, but sometimes I think sometimes out there in our community, fights and arguments can break out so easily. Frankly, social media has not always been the best of news. Disagreements abound, even in the Wellington Facebook groups. People argue, express stuff that really should not have been said. The church is the means of grace in the community. Grace comes to people who do not deserve it, and the church should be a place that counters ungrace. We should be growing such churches that exude precisely this, countering the values of the world. We should be salt and light. As I conclude, Paul Turnier has said, there are two things that we cannot do alone. One is to be married, and the other is to be a Christian. The Church of God plays a vital role, or even a necessary role. We are God's new community on earth. Yes, at times, perhaps more often than not, we are a very poor representation of that. But, my friends, we are precisely that. We are God's new community on earth. Some of the pictures I've shared today are perhaps of the ideal church, the exception, not the norm. Many churches offer more entertainment than worship, more uniformity than diversity, more exclusivity than outreach, more law than grace. But Jesus chose us. He chose you. He chose me. And in our flawed humanity is seen the paradoxical sign of God's grace and hope. Yes, we are broken, but we are God's future for the world. Karl Barth, the Swiss, I think, theologian, said this: the church exists to set up in the world a new sign which is radically dissimilar to the world's own manner and which contradicts it in a way which is full of promise. We are almost the antithesis of what our culture and our community is putting forwards. We are the place of grace. The church is worth the bother. The church may well be broken, but we are the means of grace to the world that is broken.